You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge. Yeah, there's a Mod Podge. Whole Mod Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Mod Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Columbus, Ohio, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85, and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, Dave Goss. And sometimes, when we let him in here, when he's not making bogus guarantees, Ben the Research Bear, he's back. I don't think we've talked to you since that infamous phone call that we surprised you with.
I mean, you guys haven't talked to me, but I've gotten plenty of content from Sounders fans on Twitter.
That's a good way of putting it. A lot of hashtag content.
Ben, you're our first ever phone call fan, so you're
first time, long time.
You're my first.
Yeah,
first time, long time.
Definitely, always first time, long time.
Can you, before we get going, and it's a big show here today, we're hanging out in Columbus. It's Friday morning. The game is coming up. You can watch it, of course, 7:45 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and Univision, all the coverage, right here on MLSsoccer.com. For those of you who will be following closely, I know you will be. Just about everybody will be who's involved in the U.S. soccer circles and, of course, Mexican soccer circles as well. Can you just make a statement here to Sounders fans, to everyone, about your mindset, your future, big data, everything that's kind of like let you down in this?
All I have
this
to scenario. Say is, do you guys know anything about math?
No.
No, you guys know nothing about math.
No.
So is 2 greater than 1?
I know what a guarantee is.
Is 2 greater than 1?
Yes.
Okay, so Doyle, you know, who's
for some reason
not on this episode of ETR.
He's in the octagon still. We couldn't bring him here.
That SKC and New York City FC were not going to make the playoffs in May.
So your response to you being wrong is that Doyle was more
right,
wrong.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. This is an inspirational statement.
I admit that I was wrong, and I was for some reason, Sounders fans feel like I need to admit I'm wrong. Obviously, I'm wrong.
Right.
They made the playoffs.
You're world class here at blame shifting. We can all agree on that. Look, the U.S.-Mexico game is what we'll start with here. And I just, before we get into the game, because there's so much to talk about, Jermaine Jones versus Chicharito, you know, the back line, who will play? Can Timmy Chandler push his way in? Bedoya, a starter? Pulisic? I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about Christian Pulisic. I just want to make a statement here, and I think we've done things like this before, and I think it should be obvious, but I don't know that it always is. A lot of people are going to go into this stadium tonight, MAPFRE Stadium, and they're going to take in what is one of the biggest, most important, most interesting, most passionate games in world soccer. And I just hope everybody does it with respect, both in the stadium and outside the stadium. This is what Michael Bradley had to say, and I think it's very important to remember. I would hope our fans do what they always do, which is support our team in the best, most passionate way possible. I would hope they give every person in that stadium the respect they deserve, whether they are American, Mexican, neutral, men, women, children, fill in the blank, whoever you are. Be respectful. Make sure that this is something that we can all be proud of, regardless of what happens on the field. We'll see.
I agree, and I just think it's a crazy world. We can't control the things that happen in this world, but this is a small niche that we've all become a part of in MLS and U.S. soccer, and we need to make sure that everyone feels happy and safe in those environments. And MLS stadiums and U.S. national team games should be a place. And I think everyone, you can't ignore things that happen. You have to be aware and strong about the fact that everyone should feel accepted in these environments. And that's the most I think we're capable of doing, and that's something that I'd like to see. And we're going to the game tonight. I'm really excited.
I am so jacked.
They're always incredible environments. This rivalry, one of the great parts about it is you have so many people who come across it, right? People of Mexican descent that live in America, that root for the U.S., people that lived in America and that now live in Mexico that come to the games. Mm-hmm. And every time I've traveled, especially the World Cup, Mexico and American fans get along because everyone is from similar backgrounds. Everyone loves the game. So I think that Ben just dropped his phone.
Yeah.
This is high quality. But I think that that's something that
A little bit distracted, Ben?
We can all remember, and I think that's something that everyone has to focus on.
Yeah, look, don't cross the line. That's the basic message here, and be respectful. Have fun, and that should be what goes down in Columbus tonight. Once again, 7:45 p.m. Eastern, FS1 in Univision. I just want to make a statement, another one. We've allowed Dave to move off the floor, so he is...
sitting on an air mattress.
Yes.
I'm not sure how I feel about this, to be honest.
Oh, thank you, Ben.
You're just lucky we let you have a chair with all these guarantees, pal. let's get into the game right now. Four straight 2-0 hexagonal wins for the U.S. in Columbus against Mexico. This is the opener of the Hex for both teams. It's a big game, and this has happened twice before, the opener in Columbus against Mexico, both times, as is obvious, being the fact that the last four, they've won 2-0. The U.S. won 2-0, but it is a challenging two-game set for the U.S. to start things off against Mexico at home, a stacked Mexico team, and then going to Costa Rica. So there's a lot at stake here. Let's jump into the game itself. I think we're pretty familiar with the Mexico roster, and we'll get to that in a second. We think probably from Juan Carlos Osorio that 3-3-3-1 is what people call it, but it tends to morph into different things. You know, look, tactics in these formational numbers, it always changes depending on
what's going on. We have no idea what he's going to do.
Basically, that's a really common theme with both these coaches. What do we think Jurgen will do? What do we think he should do? Is this a 4-2-3-1 scenario? Is it a 4-4-2 scenario?
I think, well, so it comes down, and I think we mentioned this on the last show, it comes down to a few debates. One of the big ones is center back, who's alongside John Brooks with Cameron out. One of them is central midfield, who's alongside Michael Bradley. I think we're pretty set that there's going to be those two forwards on the field in Josie and Bobby Wood, unless you disagree, Ben.
I mean, we'll get into this later, but... I mean, the fact that Jermaine Jones is going to come into the lineup is throwing some things into flux.
Right.
I'm not sure with Jermaine Jones and Michael Bradley in the lineup, we can really see two forwards up top. And, you know, they might both be on the field, but they might not both be playing.
And we've seen Bobby Wood drop back. We've seen him play almost in that flank position.
And the
Giussi's artist kind of occupied before him, but it's not always the most comfortable position for him. We've seen that. He's not really a guy that is like a possessional player in midfield. He's got the physical attributes. He's got the direct play. The
ability to finish.
Right, that all make him a very, very good forward. But sometimes it's felt like a square peg in a round hole with him there. Should they start Jones? Does he have to start?
Because should they or is he going?
Should he start?
It's because not about it's about we know he's going to start.
And that's kind of what Jurgen I was leading up to.
Jurgen basically said this yesterday. I mean, we know how much Jurgen is a Jermaine Jones guy. And whenever Jermaine Jones is fit, I mean,
when he's... Maybe not 100%
fit. He's not even 100% fit right now, but if he's 80% or better, we know Jurgen's going to start him.
Look,
so he will be there.
My question is, he's not in a natural way, but he's played as a number 10 for Colorado.
Right.
And so when we say it's going to change things, I wonder if Jurgen says to him, yeah, you're my number 10 right now, because you've proven that you can do it on a club team. Bradley's been playing deeper. Bradley should play deeper. I think we've all reached that point for the U.S. national team. So I wonder if... Yeah, the personnel changes and the way he plays it changes, but it doesn't change as much as we expect it to, because he's not telling Jermaine Jones to be a holding midfielder or a box-to-box guy, maybe.
Or even a center back, which he's played for this team before. I mean, where hasn't Jermaine played? 83 minutes against LA, he really, really was maybe the most dynamic, dominant player on the field for about 65 of those, but then he hit a wall.
Right, but all of those attributes he brings, that's what Jurgen wants on the field tonight. He wants the tenacity. He wants the drive. He wants the leadership, I think. I mean, he's going to have a kid next to him who's probably 18 years old, 17 years old.
Well, he's 18. Pulisic is 18 now.
And I think he wants Jermaine Jones out there for what he brings. I think he wants him out there. You know, Abner was on the last show. He's a Mexico fan. And when they lost to Chile 7-0, he's not a big fan of Rafa Márquez on the team. He felt Rafa Márquez was the only guy who stepped up and cared and fought. And Jermaine Jones brings all those attributes to the national team. Not saying other people don't. But I think Jurgen Klinsmann sees him in the term, we need to be nastier. That's the definition of what Jermaine Jones brings to this team.
Yeah, and look, this is what Jurgen said right here. He said, we'll see if he can go 90 minutes or how far he can go. But this is kind of the money part, which explains what we're talking about, which is he really is a security blanket for Jurgen. Quote, just to have him with us means a lot to us, and it makes us feel more comfortable. I mean, you can put I into the us parts, but the us also applies as well. I think Jermaine is He's a unique personality in U.S. soccer, probably international soccer, and he's always kind of been a black sheep. And I think games like this in the past, especially on both sides, have thrived on some of those characters. I mean, Landon Donovan, for a while, despite the fact that he's a pretty conventional guy in a lot of senses, was a real black sheep as it pertains to this rivalry. Was a person with kind of a a villain hat that he could put on it. We didn't always wear it, but he knew the time to put it on and push things the right way, and I think Jones can be that guy, and he's already doing it. He's talking a little trash before this game. Javier Hernandez, Chicharito, we know him well, playing in Germany now, killing it for Bayer Leverkusen. These guys have gotten into it in the past. There's no doubt about that, and here's what Jones had to say about him before this game. Quote, he's always talking, like, referee here, Jones said. You can see I pull him right here, and he's talking about this kind of clash from the past and said, small boy, come here, we have to talk. I mean, this is vintage Jermaine, both, you know, the
well,
communication being a little bit muddied, but
also
his
the
message
fact that
getting through.
He says this here. He has no qualms saying exactly what he thinks to the media.
Right.
The entire time before a big rivalry, don't give them bulletin board stuff. He sits down with Univision, I'm pretty sure it was, and says this. But it's good stuff. It's fun stuff. And
I think he looks at most other players on the field in the sense of, like, quote, small boy sometimes. He sees himself as this oversized persona in person, which, honestly, he is in a lot of cases.
I mean, Jermaine Jones is one of these kind of players who thinks he's the best player in the field at all times, no matter what game he's playing in. If he's playing against Bayern Munich, I'm sure he thought he was the best player in the field.
He probably was.
He probably was.
And you need that sometimes. You need that sometimes. So we think he'll probably start, and he's next to Michael Bradley.
Which means question won't.
No question.
And
which is a problem to me.
Yeah.
Explain.
I think without... If Jurgen decides to go 4-4-2 with Jermaine and Bradley as center midfielders, I don't think there's anybody creating chances in that midfield, and I don't think there's enough players in that midfield to deal with Guardado and Hector Herrera and those kind of guys. I just think you're sacrificing attacking and not really getting enough the other way around.
And part of that comes down to positionally. I mean, we've seen Jermaine in the past. He's not exactly the most...
Michael Bradley struggles to play with
stable,
him. Because
right.
No one
stable.
Knows where he's going to be.
Yeah, he's unpredictable.
And Bradley likes to read the game, and he likes to be prepared, and he likes to be a step ahead. And that was one of the things we saw when they played together. Michael Bradley didn't know where to be.
And also, Michael Bradley is at his best, like you said, when he can read the game, and it comes to him, and he can you know... cut things off before they get going. 1v1 defending, if you're pulling him out of that middle spot, that's not Michael Bradley's strength.
Yeah, although he looked really good against NYCFC. But
he
yes,
did.
I agree.
But that, but that's not what he... I mean, you can read some pieces on MLSoccer.com about this. But, I mean, that's not his strength. The reason that Toronto FC has succeeded because they have relied on him as not a 1v1 defender. They've relied on him as you're the second guy coming in. You're just getting the ball. You're starting the break. And also, we've seen since Jurgen has decided to move Bradley to the number 6 position... they have way more possession. The win percentage is higher. They have the shot differential is way better. He's not going to move. I mean, Bradley's going to play the number 6 on Friday night. But I think with Jermaine playing next to him, it's a little bit different than Sasha playing next to him. Because he has no idea what Jermaine's going to do.
I wonder, with the emergence of Pulisic, how much that changes, you know, chance creation.
Right.
I wonder if he says to himself, I have Fabian Johnson. I think he's going to have Fabian Johnson and Pulisic on the wing, and he said, that's where my chance creations come from. Direct play, because Mexico's going to have possession in this game.
Right.
They're going to push numbers up. I think the U.S. big advantage today is that Josie and Bobby Wood can outwork anyone on the Mexico backline by themselves, and the two of them together, I think, can create opportunities off of a counterattack, off of a long ball. And so I don't know that he thinks I need a full chance creator in central midfield.
And I don't think we expect the U.S. to come out here and be, you know, ticky-tocking around and creating chance after chance after chance. It's really not the way this rivalry goes in large part. Usually it's the U.S. taking advantage of the chances they do create and being pragmatic in that sense. And I do think the one place Mexico are a little bit vulnerable are on that flank. And if you have Fabian Johnson and Christian Pulisic, which we've seen their speed, we've seen their ability to be dynamic in open field, and if you can suck Mexico in a little bit, those guys can hurt them on the break. And when you have two targets in the box like that, to draw away central defenders, to occupy them, that's an opportunity for the U.S. And then, you know, I know Jeff Cameron's being out. That hurts because of the distribution out of the back that sparks some of those things because of his ability on set pieces. But
so who starts there? Who starts in Jeff Cameron's place?
It's going to be Omar, right?
I mean, you think it's going to be Omar. Jurgen Klinsmann, we've literally no idea. We could literally, I mean,
it's going to be Michael Orozco.
I would not be surprised if it's not if it's Michael Orozco there.
I mean, you got Beasler as a
but,
not
I mean,
Beasler's
you know,
not really an option though because they're two left sided center backs.
He does like having left footed center backs at the left center back position and right footed center backs at the right center back position. So it's really down to Omar,
Birnbaum,
and Steve Birnbaum and Michael Orozco. I would not be surprised with any of those two players. If it was me, I would definitely pick Omari. The guy is in form. He just won a Liga MX championship. His team is now in second place in Liga MX. And I just think that of those three guys, he's the best option, but I would not be surprised with any of those.
He also brings out set-piece ability as well. But, you know, and this is not to be a knock on Omar at all. In the open field, he is not... His agility sometimes leaves a little bit to be desired. His last ditch defending, his ability to get in the way of things. I think his distribution is underrated, but there are sometimes issues on that sense. Like it's a big decision for you're getting this game.
I agree wholeheartedly with that statement. I think on this game we're gonna be the USA is gonna be on the back foot anyway, so it's kind of plays to Omar's game a little bit.
Yeah.
And we've seen from Birnbaum that he's kind of a player very similar to Omar Gonzalez. I think he's not quick on the turn. He sometimes gets lost a little bit. He's very good, you know, when he's on the back foot. And I think considering they're very similar players,
there's also a question
and
of
Omar is playing better right now, I think you have to go Omar.
If it was Jeff Cameron, you would go with – if he was there, I think you probably end up going with – it obviously would be Brooks. But if Brooks is not there, Beasley's your obvious plug-in. And those guys know how to play together, and they complement each other well. In this case, because Brooks is young, and I don't think he's necessarily the most vocal player.
Yeah,
you want Omar's a guy that will talk and will be back there and has the experience in games like this in big games. Not to say Steve Birnbaum doesn't, but he's kind of beginning of his arc as an international center back, and this would be a big ask of him.
And I think the key for the center backs is going to be watching Chicharito and knowing where he is in the box, because Chicharito isn't going to do as much for you outside of the box in link-up play. You're going to have three or four creators, though, on this field for Mexico, and you're going to have Tecatito, and you're going to have potentially Marco Fabian, who's in incredible form right now. Giovanni Dos Santos, we know what he can do. Vela's on the bench. You have guys that can take guys on one-on-one.
I mean, the whole team is full of them.
But the point of the spear is Chicharito and his ability to just find gaps in the box and little touches. And the communication between the center backs is going to be huge. But I think, like you said, Omar's ability to talk and organize and be a part of that back line and have a little bit of experience playing with them before, a little bit more than the other guys outside of Beasley, I think is going to be huge in making that decision. A decision, by the way, where he should be playing next to Yedlin and he should be playing next to Fabian Johnson.
So those are the two. Timmy Chandler, you're not giving him – I mean,
he has
does he drop in? I mean,
he has played well for his league team over the last few weeks. He has played well for his league team in the past and come to the U.S. national team and not played well.
Yeah,
and I don't know why you start that in a Mexico game or on the road against Costa Rica, by the way, because he has never played well on the road for the U.S.
But again, it's Jurgen Klinsmann. We have literally no idea what he's going to do. I think it's very possible that Timmy Chandler starts this game ahead of Dan Dier.
He asked Yedlin to play better, and Yedlin went back to Newcastle, had an assist last week, and played better.
I mean, we saw in the last game that Yedlin played for the U.S. team, he basically threw DeAndre Yedlin under the bus after the game.
But he said
he's clearly not happy with him. It's only been a month.
But he said he has to be better, and he went back to his club team and played better. And he's been his starter, and I think he fits in this game well. You mentioned on the flanks, his speed is going to be huge in giving width, because Bedoya doesn't really give you that width. And if you even have him pinch in more to help pack the midfield a little bit and cover some...
Which is, I think, what happened. It's just a natural rotation as that left side drifts forward.
Right.
Is to just kind of everybody needs to shift over, and that's where Yedlin's speed comes in handy. Because if he does get caught up, which he has a tendency to do from time to time, he can recover.
And he's going to get beat on the dribble because there's players on this L3 team that will beat him, but he has that speed to recover. Mm-hmm. And that's what's made him a good defender so far. And he stays in. He doesn't give up on the plays. That's what allows him to get back. So I think that has to be the starting back line.
Who's the favorite here? Expected goals for the U.S. Big shout out to a longtime listener, Charlie Fiction, for this one. 1.4 expected goals. That's not two. Everybody's looking for
these
two.
These are not scientific numbers.
Dos a cero. Yeah.
These are literally coming from Charlie Fiction's head and not any... SBI numbers or anything
of course.
Like that. Just want to point that out.
I think right now the pick is
expected
a tie.
Fictional goals, is that what they're?
Yeah.
I think right now the pick is a tie between the two teams. Mexico, I think, will come out with more of the ball. If the U.S. can avoid giving up a goal early, we've seen in the past the pressure build on Mexico. It's the beginning of the hex cycle. Last 4 years ago, they started the hex cycle terribly, and that led to them having to fire their coach and go into the playoff. These are all the same players outside of Tecatito, really. They're all the same guys on the field. They know that history. They know the frustration against the U.S. So,
and they've talked about it. They've said, like Juan Carlos Osorio said, this is an opportunity for us to write a new history. Because right now this is kind of this huge weight. It's this huge thing that just defines the rivalry in so many ways. I mean, everybody understands it. Everybody focuses on it. It's all the talk. There's this expectation that somehow, some way, I mean, this is how legends are born. You know, Clint Dempsey misses a penalty in 2013 to not make it 3-0. Just to hold on to the scoreline, that's now been a big thing. The U.S. is under pressure in that sense too, though, right? I mean, this is their first game of the Hex. Tough two games. I do think Mexico is under more pressure, but I do wonder who comes out and who has that little jangle and how the environment affects them.
The U.S. obviously is pressure, but I think considering there's so many games left and they don't really, I mean, if you have less than 3 points, it's not necessary. These are not, I mean,
it's going to look bad.
It's going to look bad, but it's not necessary to get 3 points here. For Mexico, it's more about, I think that the pressure's on them to break this streak of, I mean, the fact that there's been four straight games with the same scoreline.
Over 15
is
years.
Kind of, I mean, if you put the odds 15 years ago, the odds of this happening
minuscule.
Every 4 years is minuscule. So the pressure's on them to break this streak. To me.
Now,
I don't think there's a lot of pressure in the U.S. right now.
No, I think that probably goes for both sides. But they'll be desperate to do it. Now, let's talk Columbus. And, look, we'll get to a prediction in at the end of this segment here. But there's been a lot of talk about Columbus being the permanent site of this game. And as it stands, Sunil Gulati is saying, look, I'd be crazy to move it if we don't lose. If we keep winning, why would you ever move it? Because this is so important competitively and from a perception standpoint. You know, Columbus is a great soccer city. There's no doubt about that. This has been an incredible event for, as you said, 15 some years running. Is it time to think about moving?
No, absolutely not. We have a young soccer culture here. It's growing pretty fast. This is a pillar. This is something every single soccer fan. Have you been to Columbus yet? Have you done that game? This is my second time. The first time I came, I messaged my friend who lives in Kentucky. I was like, would you come? Absolutely, I'm going to come. This is a benchmark for the U.S. national team that every 4 years they're going to play Mexico here, and they're going to have this great crowd, and everyone loves watching it on TV, and everyone, you talked about the moments that have happened over those four games. I mean, it's only four matches, but over those four games, the Landon Donovan goal in the last one with the pink eye and everything. 4 years earlier, Michael Bradley scores twice. The environment is great. It's cold here. The Mexico players having to wear those gloves. DeMarcus Beasley off the corner kick in 2006 or 2005. Obviously, the first one. I think this is one of the pillars right now of what U.S. soccer is. And the Dos Aceros helps. So if they lose, maybe people think it changes. But I wouldn't imagine why you'd want to change something that already works.
They were really discussing this. Obviously, it's not going to move. I mean, until if they lose on Friday night, I could see it. Maybe now they're open to moving it. I don't really see why they would, though.
And where would you even move it to?
I mean, Kansas City.
Sporting Park. But they played how many qualifiers? I mean, they played how many qualifiers there? They played Jamaica. Like, they've played two in the last cycle.
I think what you said about the pillar is important because it does provide kind of this centralized point to rally around in reference to this rivalry. And Mexico has that for just about everything with Azteca. Everything revolves around this, like, kind of hallowed ground. And I don't know that Columbus is that. But and Ben's giving me the
It's been tough.
Just because there's been a lot of discussions about moving their games away from
with so
Azteca.
Many people playing in Europe, is it
because
still an advantage?
They come to Azteca and they're also dealing with the high altitude and all the problems because they don't play in Mexico anymore.
You can also look at the federation and say, well, maybe don't play all your friendlies in the U.S.
Yeah.
So there are flip sides to all this. How do you create competitive advantage? Right now, there's no doubt about it. Columbus is a competitive advantage for the U.S., maybe just in perception, but that's a big deal in the game. Remember the game tonight, 7:45 p.m. Eastern, FS1 and Univision. Let's get some predictions here, guys. How does the U.S. start the Hex? 2-0? I mean, who's going to go for five in a row?
I think it's 2-1. I think it goes 1-1. I think the U.S. gets a late one, but I can't see them shutting this team out. I'm not saying they're favorites. I'm not even saying they're the better team. I just think the way that this rivalry has worked, I think that the U.S. keeps their head, and I think Mexico feels pressure build as the game goes on. And like I said, I think you have two guys up top who can score from a half chance. The way Josie's playing, the ability that he has, the type of player Bobby Wood is, and I think the skill of Pulisic on the wing, I think that they get goals maybe that they don't deserve, but they get the victory.
If Pulisic gets a goal in this game, his his like growing, and I'm just gonna, it's not legend yet, but his growing profile, which is already massive, every time you see the U.S. talked about in a mainstream media sense, Christian Pulisic is the face.
Yeah, I got a message.
Which is crazy.
I got a message from my cousin who read the Sports Illustrated piece and goes, is this guy really this good? Like,
and this could be the real coming out. I mean, people within the game, people kind of on this kind of, you know, obsessive level that a lot of us are,
yeah,
know him back to front. But this is a mainstream opportunity for him to just break out. Really, I mean, against Mexico in World Cup qualifying, 18 years old.
Mexico also lost their right back a couple of months ago, so they really don't have a right back right now. So that they're going to be playing three in the back, and they're going to have a forward playing on the right as a defender. And I think
as a
that's,
wing back,
he can really exploit that opportunity.
So you're giving the U.S. a win here?
No. Obviously, no. I can't be doing that right now. It's 1-1. It's Chicharito on the 35th minute. Josie Altidore on the 74th minute.
Wow, very specific.
I'm always specific about my predictions, as you know.
Would you call this a guarantee?
Everything's a guarantee when I say it. I think Mexico's very strong right now. We haven't talked about it in the show, but
let's talk about it.
If you look at the roster is very strong. We know they have plenty of attacking players. I think U.S. is going to be on the back foot. I think we're going to see something like 35% possession for the U.S. We're going to see 20 shots to 3 or 4 or something like that.
3 or 4, really?
But they're not going to be high-quality shots for Mexico. I think we're just going to see the U.S. on the counter, and I think they have plenty of they're going to score on one of those opportunities, and Josie's going to hold the ball up. He's going to make a run. He's going to get a ball from Pulisic, or he's going to get a ball from Yedlin, or he's going to get a ball from one of those wide players, and he's going to be able to finish it. Chicharito, I think he's just in the best form he's ever been in against going into a U.S. game. And
he seems a little bit more comfortable.
And considering I think there's going to be some miscommunication among the U.S. defenders, considering...
And all it takes is one with him.
All it takes is one, yeah. as you know. I think he'll find some space and get a goal. I just think it's going to be, you know, like another classic U.S.-Mexico game.
Yep.
It's going to be very close.
The Mexico right now, because you said how strong the team is, you have Hector Herrera in midfield. He hasn't been starting consistently for Porto over the last few weeks. He's been one of the strongest players in this rivalry over the last few years. Andreas Guardado, of course, we've talked about a million times on this show. So those guys are going to play in central midfield. Diego Reyes, who's been their star center back, he's been playing holding midfield for Espanyol over the last few weeks this season. I don't know if there's any room for him in that midfield.
Juan Carlos Osorio, the Mexican team manager, has mentioned getting taller players onto the field to deal with set pieces, because that's typically where the U.S. has killed Mexico. So I wouldn't be surprised, considering the form of Herrera.
That you start Reyes,
at center defensive mid.
And you bring another center back on the field.
He brought in, among the defenders, almost every single one of them was a center back, except for Layún. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he clearly trusts these guys to play center back, so I wouldn't be surprised if you see Reyes.
He could also play Rafa Márquez there. He has in the past.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting, because they're not guys that are going to operate, like Ben said, in space as well. Does the U.S. have the speed and the 1-on-1v1 ability to take advantage of that? Or is it just become whoever's, you know, stronger in the air and, you know, works a little bit harder?
I think it's a lot depending on what kind of game it is. I mean, Mexico has the talent in the attacking sense, but they haven't brought along a lot of great defenders. So I think they're going to be trying to push the game and just keep the ball, because they don't want to have to defend. So that's why I'm saying the possession and more shots and whatever, but I don't think that's necessarily going to reflect the way that the game's actually going to go. I think the U.S. is going to be very dangerous on the counter.
Yeah, competitive, not dominant. I think I agree. I'm going to go 1-1 with you. Ben, I'd been thinking Mexico win for the better part of 2 weeks, but just talking through and kind of thinking about this and thinking about the pressure and thinking about what this game means to both sides, I just feel like it's going to be really tight. Two moments, Pulisic to Josie, and then, you know, Chicharito. And
so
if the U.S. win,
so you're copying my prediction of
I am,
of
but
goals
if the U.S. win,
really, that's what you're doing?
U.S. win 2-1, a PK finished by Josie, so Josie gets the brace. See? I pulled off. You had convinced me.
Can you give us a 3-1 scenario, a 1-0 win-loss scenario,
and
a 2-1 loss scenario?
I can go through it all.
So then I can cut this up after and just be like, Andrew Wiebe predicted
it. Exactly.
This is why he's an MLS
soccer.com expert. That's what we do after every show. I thought I'd just go through and make all the scenarios. Jake, it's be happy here, Ben. I'm jumping on your bandwagon, man. That's all we got here. We're going to jump into some MLS news next. Jordan Morris, not with the U.S., but he's the Rookie of the Year. We'll talk about that and Jeff Kassar's new deal at RSL.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter. But I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out.
Back on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Weeby, David Goss, Ben the Research Bear, hanging out here in Columbus, Ohio, before we head over to the U.S.-Mexico game. Tonight, if you're listening to this and you see us in the parking lot or at the stadium or wherever around Columbus, say what's up. We always like to say hi to fellow soccer fans out there.
We met a Sounders fan the other night.
Randomly. Yeah,
like a few blocks from our office.
Yeah.
That was
on
a good
business.
Time. He said he was a, since 2009, original season ticket holder.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Yep. Always happy to chat and BS about soccer in America. We do it all the time. This is basically what our lives revolve around. I don't know what to say about that other than it's pretty fun. Generally, let's jump into some MLS news here, and we will start.
Can I just, on that last point, yep. We drove down here, multiple USL conversations. We passed through Harrisburg City.
Oh, God.
And
yeah.
The excitement
and,
in the car.
And, like, and Bethlehem, I suggested getting off at Bethlehem.
And going to see the original Steel Field.
Well, yeah. I just want some Bethlehem Steel gear.
Yeah.
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 So
we almost went to the island that is City Island.
Yeah.
We didn't quite make it there, so no. I guess that's a lot.
But that's how nerdy we are about
A little
this.
Empty talk there. Let's talk MLS, and let's start with Jordan Morris. Congratulations for winning Rookie of the Year, his first season here as a professional. Of course, had kind of a tug-of-war between MLS and Werder Bremen. Chose the Sounders, and it worked out really well for him. 12 goals, 4 assists. The Sounders were 10-2-1 in matches that he scored, which is not like some, you know, incredibly insightful stat. But you know what? You got to score the goals, and you got the wins out of it. So
I mean, we don't come to Andrew Weeby for the insightful stats.
Oh, okay.
We come to the research pair for the insightful stats.
Okay, I'll ask you for a guarantee later. Don't worry about it. but look, this is what should have happened, I think. This is what, we talked about this. It kind of had been a Keegan Rosenberry, Jordan Morris race, and Jack Harrison had a few moments there in which he pushed both of them. But 45% of the vote for Jordan Morris. Remember, players vote in this, media votes in this, club officials vote in this. Jordan Morris won all those categories. I was a bit surprised, though, that the media went 44-41, 44% voting for Morris, 41% for Keegan Rosenberry. That seems a little bit strange to me.
Yeah, well, they actually had opposite seasons. Morris started slow and came on, and Rosenberry started hot and then kind of hit a wall towards the end of the season.
And also the union hit a wall.
I was going to say Rosenberry's part is tough because the team played not as well and the defense wasn't as strong, and he can control less, I think. But Jordan Morris was the one of the star players on a team that is competing for MLS Cup. So that's rare for a rookie, and I don't think you can look past that.
There was some backlash to the backlash of Keegan Rosenberry not getting all the vote. I think it's kind of absurd just because a guy plays every single minute. You know, it's great. Good job.
I didn't mean he didn't have a good season.
I think the last 1,500 of those minutes were not very good. if you watch the Philadelphia Union, he was great at the beginning of the season, but he really struggled towards the end of the year. Teams were attacking his side of the field the entire time. And I think Jordan Morris, you know, he did everything that was asked of him. Really, all I really care about right now is the status of his hamstring. I mean, this is great for him. Good job. You won the Rookie of the Year. Are you going to play
right
next week? It's really all I care about personally.
Yeah.
November 22nd, of course, at Central League Field. First leg of those Western Conference Championship. Look, that is a big concern right now. But what I will say, it's two straight years. What it's encouraging is that two straight years, a player came out of college, not out of the Super Draft, although Kyle Larin did, obviously, and crushed it. And just scored goals for fun. And showed that there are young attacking players in this continent, because you can't say country, obviously, because Kyle Larin's a Canadian, and he's going to be kind of the basis of that national team for a long time to come, I think. But that there are these young talents that, given the opportunity in a professional setting, can thrive.
Yeah.
And Brad Evans said it over and over this year. Jordan Morris could have had you know, he'll say double the goals. I think that's an unrealistic thing. You know, not everybody finishes every chance, and that's just the
Thanks,
way.
Thanks, Thierry Evans.
Right. That's where the striker. Yeah, Thierry Evans. That's pretty good. TT Evans. That's where the striker situation comes in. Look, you score enough, and that's all that matters. And I think 12 is a really good haul for him.
He started,
but we saw improvement.
Yeah, I said he started scoring a couple with his left towards the end of the season. He set up Lodeiro with that chance where you don't think he's going to go left, and then he forced himself there. And yeah, it's a softly hitting cross or pass, whatever. But
what's right
yeah,
on the money?
He saw improvement. Also, he struggled out wide. Valdez starts scoring. He goes out wide in the postseason. He played. I think he's played very well. I thought he was fantastic in the first leg against FC Dallas out on that left wing. Another sense of improvement, tactical awareness. I think he's just looked more comfortable, and I think he's becoming a leader, which is should be exciting for U.S. fans because you can have a guy who can be a part of this program for 10 years.
Right. You start looking at a maybe, you know, not to say that he will be a winger for the U.S. because I don't think that that is obviously his best position, but the versatility that you'll start to have in those front attacking four positions, if Josie's healthy, Bobby's up there, you've got Jordan Morris, you've got Pulisic, who now has basically cemented himself in a probably a starting role, realistically, the way he's been playing in Germany and for the U.S. when he's there. And all of a sudden you start thinking, wow, when is the last time we had this many young options or just on the beginning of their prime options in the attacking side of the field? It's an exciting time for U.S. fans, it's an exciting time for MLS fans, for Sounders fans.
Doyle has said that on this show, that this is the deepest the U.S. striker pool has ever been. But we were just sitting here before this USA-Mexico game talking about 2007 and Eddie Johnson starting up top, and he scored a couple goals for KC, and immediately he's the starting forward. Because you scored goals, and you were in the talk for it.
Right.
And now you're Jordan Morris. You look at it, you have an uphill battle over the next few years because you got two guys right in front of you right now who are young and playing phenomenally, and it's not just to guarantee that if you're American and you score a couple goals, that you're starting up forward. And I don't know the last time we've seen that.
Yep. And you see that in this. A little bit of a hamstring issue. Yeah, they're not going to hold on to it, but oftentimes the U.S. do like to monitor them. Back to Seattle, man. We've got guys. We're not worried about – we're not in trouble if
Alan
you can't
Gordon.
Play. Right. Hey, my guy, Alan.
Alan Gordon.
Sorry, just reliving the 2013 goal call.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about this, but Alan Gordon did replace Jordan Morris on that U.S. roster. Yeah. We'll see how much he plays or what he does.
I doubt he sees the field. Yeah, but
it's very doubtful.
I mean, it does get me excited just to hear his name. So.
By the way, Jack Harrison in the final for the AT&T Goal of the Year voting. It's Jack Harrison versus Shaquel Zengashi. It's the Harrison goal in which he megs Ambrose Iyongo, comes around, hits that left footer inside the back post. I personally am heartbroken that Quincy Namarakwa and Giovanni Dos Santos aren't in the final, but they'll announce this at halftime of tonight's game, U.S.-Mexico. Who should win it?
I bet you Giovanni Dos Santos is heartbroken right now.
Just mourning, in absolute mourning.
He's really key. Really
but Quincy Namarakwa should have won it, so
yeah.
That's my vote.
Yeah. Oh, that's not how this works.
Yeah,
he's not on the ballot.
I have the Gashi goal.
Yeah.
Skelchengazi. Wow, just mispronounced that while trying to make fun of
uh-huh.
me. Mispronounced
yeah.
It.
That's come up.
That's really come
on
up
the record.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I think the technical skill and the execution he showed off in that goal is way beyond what Harrison showed. I mean, we've seen goals like Harrison's before many times. I don't think it's really that special, to be honest. It was a great goal.
Oh, man.
But it wasn't like, oh, hard my God, I'm
right.
to get out of my seat to see this goal. No,
right.
Nothing like that.
So Ben Baer, for our co-ed team, he's con man. He's Connor Casey for us. He scores goals like that left and right.
Yeah, it's not really something to get excited about.
Goss is like making fun of it, but yeah, I do score goals like that. Even though I'm terrible.
The number 10 for your team, I think, I don't think you have one, but RSL is missing one now as well. There's some news out of Salt Lake. The first is that Jeff Kassar will be back for 2017 as the head coach. Just a one-year deal. There are options for further years. They have not shared what will trigger those options, but obviously performance-based, you would think. Playoffs have something to do with where they finish in the playoffs. I won't speculate on that. It's not worth doing that. But he has an opportunity to give himself more years. But for now, just the one-year guaranteed. Javi Morales, looks like the era is over of Javi Mo. At RSL, he has been the most productive chance creator in MLS, according to Opta, since they started gathering data. I mean, by far, at the top of just about every category or in the top three or four. So this is a big loss, and he really has, along with Kyle Beckerman and Nick Raimondo, and to a certain extent, guys like Hamas and Olave and Nat Borchers who've moved on. Now I can't pronounce anything because I'm just looking at you waiting for you to just crush me.
I was going to wax poetic about Javi Mo. I think, Guillermo Barreto Scoloto is the guy who really brought the Argentine number 10 back into MLS. But I think, I mean, he was only around for a couple of years, and I think Javi Mo really continued that legacy. And I think the reason you see guys like Diego Valeri, Mauro Diaz, I can't think of the other guys right now, but there's
Ignacio Piatti.
Hector Villalba next year coming in.
Hector Villalba. These guys coming for Argentina. I think a lot of that, you can credit Javi Mo for that.
Gomez was part of this crew.
He didn't really, you didn't see that proliferation of Argentine playmakers.
Of more guys following him.
What we saw is RSL. RSL brings in Javi Mo, and they are successful. And then teams try and copy that format. And I think his legacy in MLS is, you know, pretty high up there. I think he's an MLS legend personally. I think he's a guy that we need to celebrate. He was the fulcrum of a team that made the playoffs every single year.
And also was not just made the playoffs, but one of, was kind of a tactical, not anomaly, but somebody who took a chance. Who said, you know what, we're going to go with this diamond, and it's going to work, and Javi Mo's going to be one of the reasons behind it, which was really impressive. If he would have made one more start this year, it would have triggered his 2017 option. He did not start the final game of the season against Seattle. Ended with 23 starts, 4 goals, 4 assists this year. One of his least productive by far in MLS. And, of course, injury, unfortunately, really derailed part of his career here. But he was not happy about this. RSL said, hey, we'd love to have him back in a certain role, but certainly not at the number that he was at. Javi Mo said, hey, RSL never offered me another role or another contract. Simple as that. They're looking to go another way. He also wants to stay. He's not retiring, he says. My family, we belong here. We're almost from Utah, and he's been there for almost a decade. It really has been formative for him. But let's say he doesn't come back to RSL. Let's say he stays in MLS. Where could he go?
I think, first of all, I think RSL made a big mistake by just letting him go and not offering at least a contract to return. I think he can go to a number of teams. I think his role right now is to be the 12th guy. He's the first guy off the bench.
I'm going to throw something
out there. He's
Mauro Rosales.
But
a better version of Mauro Rosales.
Could he go? See, Dallas have a little bit of an issue here. They may not want to go drop a bunch of cash to replace a guy in Mauro Diaz who's going to be out for a while. You go to a place with Profe, with Poppy, and come in there, and you know that you're going to get games for the first half of the season at least. Yeah. Could that be a place for Javier Morales, FC Dallas?
Absolutely.
Outside of like maybe NYCFC, and we don't even know what the team will look like, maybe TFC, I can't imagine a team in this league that won't need him. If he's going to accept that 12th man role, I can't imagine a team in MLS that wouldn't take him. Because the guy's going to create chances off the bench, and he's going to give you spot starts. So that's genuinely how I feel. He still has quality. He physically can't start. He can't give you a full season, and you can't build a team around uncertainty like that. I think that was an issue for RSL.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I mean, Vancouver pulling some strings off the bench for that speed. San Jose sitting in front of that back line and having the options that he has to serve to there. I mean, there are a few teams I'm genuinely saying that he can't play for.
And of course, the two expansion teams, we have no idea what they're going to look like. Right. But having Javi Mo as a piece, as a leader, I think that would be good. That would be a great move for
Jeff Cassar, Dave, what do you think about this move?
I think that they ran out of steam this season. I don't think they had the tools to get through a full season. I don't think the roster was deep enough with quality. And I think the amount of impact that Javi Mo had and wasn't always healthy, and Yura ended up with injuries and whatnot.
They never really got all those three guys at the top together at the same time as far as health and form.
Right. They had it running in the beginning of the season. So you have to ask the question, was it not ready yet? And if we have a few more elements to it, can he play like he did the first half of the season throughout the season? Or the fact that they fell apart so badly means that emotionally he couldn't affect this team. Mm-hmm. And listen, if everyone has Giovinco, then everyone could be a decent coach in MLS. So the question is, is he the guy to put it together? I like the idea of not completely blowing this thing up, because I think there's pieces there, and I think you have elements you need to add. But in Glad, Plata, Mavsisian, and I guess Burrito, I think you have four in their primary young players.
I think they like some of those midfield players. I think they like Omar Holness a lot. I think he'll push his way in. But this is a team that you certainly don't blow
Jordan
it up.
Allen signed an extension.
They've been building things.
This is a team that scored 2 goals in the last 6 games.
Right. Agreed. That's 6 games, though. That's not the definition of their whole season. I think they're working towards something.
I think it's the same as Philly. I think you saw things. You don't need to completely revamp it just yet.
Right. You improve it, see where we can go. Before we hit the break, a little bit of news out of Montreal. Of course, they're going to host a big game on November 22nd against Toronto FC. 40,000 tickets sold at Olympic Stadium. Jacked. So jacked. Ben and I believe, were at that game, CCL final.
I've been to many sporting events. That was the loudest stadium, the CCL final against Club America. That was the loudest stadium I've ever been in. I was literally shaking.
This is going to be awesome. I'm really upset that I won't be there. But my friends in Montreal and some of you folks going up from Toronto, have fun. It's going to be a great time. That's all we have right now for this segment. We're going to go to the mailbag. We got some good stuff. Our eulogies, they inspired some real emotions.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com. or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Walking outside, labyrinthian over cracks along under the trees. I know this town grounded in a compass. Cardinal landing in the dogwood.
Back on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Ben the Research Bear. We're into the mailbag. I don't know how many hours we have left here, guys. We got about 9 hours until the game starts, something like that.
I'm ready to get out to the parking lot and see the fans. It's so much fun. This is my second one. I came in 2013. I got off a bus, a Greyhound from New York, with no one I knew.
Story.
And all of a sudden, I made a bunch of friends. Yep. I mean, it's
just know that that's not a universal thing for everyone. That's just a Dave Goss thing.
But you can also do it. Yeah,
you can do it. Can also do it.
Yes, it is Dave Goss thing.
Yeah. Let's go to the mailbag here. Evan Ream from SAC. We know him well. Terrence Boyd, FC Dallas guys. Perfect move or perfect move? I think I did a little reporting earlier this year, and I think there's a chance that the Red Bulls may have a discovery claim on him. I think he might be a good option for him. Omar Damari is not coming back. He's not. Gonzalo Verón will be back, but they do maybe need a change-up. I'm not saying Bradley Art Phillips needs to be replaced, but you might want to, you know, it'd be nice to push him a little bit more. And there's some guys that they've had that haven't been that player. You know, Abong didn't do it. Doesn't seem like he'll be an impact for them going forward, but I'd love to see Terrence Boyd in MLS.
I would love to see him in MLS, absolutely. I think if he's healthy, he could help a lot of teams. I don't mind that FC Dallas link because I think he does a lot of work up top by himself. He's got the speed. He can finish opportunities.
You'd have thunder and lightning with Urruti and Boyd, too.
Yeah, it would be great. I mean, they need a striker.
They do.
They need someone to at least, even if you think Urruti's the starter, split some time with him and take some pressure off him. I agree with the Red Bulls, though. They started this year. They were going to play Verón in a 4-2-2-2-2. I made like 7-2s in there. I had too many. I don't know. If they don't think Verón's the guy, then they need to figure out what's next because they either need more quality on the wings or they need to have the ability to change the way they play in moments when teams figure them out.
I think it's all about what kind of role and what kind of salary he's willing to accept. And I think if you're the Red Bulls, I don't think that's going to happen. I think because
if he's a mixed screw level player,
he's going to look at the Red Bulls and be like, Bradley Ray Phillips is a starter, and I'm not going to be able to get that starting spot. Right. So he's not going to go to the Red Bulls.
Yeah, well,
I can't see that. If he comes to MLS, he's going to want to be, you are the number one guy. You are our guy. So it has to be a team like that.
It's also hard to give him that based on his injury.
I agree with that, but I think coming from where he's coming from and what he's experienced over the past, 4 years, I don't think he's going to want to leave Europe to be a backup.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. Last mailbag here item, and it's a great one from Kellen Abreu. You know him well. You may be familiar. Got season tickets, I believe, this year to the LA Galaxy. Has really enjoyed the season with his wife and daughters. Likes listening to the show. What's up, guys? I hope you're having fun out there, and I hope you're not too sad because our eulogies, we had a lot of fun with them. We got some good feedback on them, but Kellen emailed in and says, hey, guys, A, we've really enjoyed the season, watching games on MLS Live, going to San Jose for the All-Star game, but there has been the heartbreak of defeat. He said they were listening to the show the other day, and he has a bone to pick. He says, your Galaxy eulogy taught my youngest daughter, Quinn, the heartbreak of sports. As during the Galaxy eulogy, he started to hear sniffles, which turned to whimpers, which turned to sobbing, which turned to her saying, Daddy, I want to go to more LA Galaxy games. He then had to remind her that they do get to see the women's national team play for her mom's birthday. So things got better for her, but she's getting used to the disappointment. Abner killed the eulogy. He really stole the show.
This all sounds so familiar.
This is a what? Jets?
Jets, Mets, Knicks, Wisconsin. I'm 27 years old. None of my teams ever won.
The point
of sports is to get heartbroken.
Well, that depends on your perspective. That depends on certainly from his perspective. Quinn, don't listen to Ben. Don't listen to Ben. Good times are coming. Things will be
race
okay.
To Sace.
Race to Sace. Yeah, the Race to Sace is still on. The Race to Sace is not still over. So thanks to Kellen for emailing us. Thanks to you guys for joining me here in Columbus. We've got some things to do today. As I said, hit us up out of the stadium if you see us. Come say hi. We always enjoy that. I mean, I'm really looking forward to just being in the parking lot and experiencing that and the tailgating, the community, and I've always seen you guys basically from afar.
Right, you come by before work.
Right,
and you're like, yeah, this will be a good time.
Hey, look at all the stuff we have on the grill. This is going to be brilliant. Yeah. It's going to be great.
I hope that you brought your boots because some of the best pickup soccer games I've ever played have been USA-Mexico parking lots. I remember.
You don't wear your boots out there, don't.
No, of course not. 2009, though, after we got destroyed in the Gold Cup final, it poured rain. Everyone left, and there was a group of Mexico fans that came over and challenged us, and we played pickup soccer. I remember Jurgen's first game. Down in Philly, it was like 11:30, 12 at night, and we were playing a full-on pickup soccer game in the parking lot. I remember the last time I was here. It's so much fun. It's such a good time.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I can't wait. We got some carne asada marinating in the fridge right now. A little bit of, a little beer, a little green onion. It's going to be some good stuff. The game is going to be great as well. Remember, I can't emphasize this enough. Respect. Be who you want to be, and let's make sure that this is a game for everybody that everybody can enjoy. I think it will be. I have faith in U.S. soccer fans. I have faith in people. So I'm looking forward to it. Dave, I know you are. Ben, the research bear, wherever he is wandering around, is as well. That's all we have. Big thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday. Have a good one, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.